It is the 27th day of May in the year 2021 from the Lucy Coleman Studio in Los Angeles, California, United States of America, on God's good, great planet Earth. Welcome to another webcast. I was just thinking to myself, Lucy and I sat down a number of years ago and calculated up to that particular point of us being married and being a part of a Christian church and organizations. We were counting up all the money that we had given to the church out of our gifts to the church. And at that time, it was about $35,000 to $40,000. And this was years ago, more than 10, 15 years ago, when we had that discussion. And I thought about this. When you think of offerings to the church for what being a member of the church was supposed to do, and it definitely wasn't the falsification of trying to win other people to Christ. I never went and witnessed to try to win anyone to God. I've always operated under the idea that since God called me at an early age, why would he be ambivalent and not place his mark of approval on all of his creation? So there was no need of me to go out and win the lost. When joining that organization, I was just thinking here in the studio, what were my objections to joining it? In other words, what would be against me if I consciously, seriously didn't do that? How much money would I have? I'm referring back to the book that I was referring to in yesterday's webcast, Powernomics. I was speaking with another pastor about the book, and he was talking about when it came out, and of course, it was featured at Fred Price's Doom Dome. That's what I called it. I didn't call that a church. I was, as an apologist and as an apologist-minded pastor, I did not agree. And let me, you know, take a little sidebar right now and share with you why I didn't agree with what Fred Price was teaching. Because he's dead, and I'm alive. And the people that claimed his teachings are dead, and I'm alive. And the only thing that I've ever followed in my life was what God has said to me in the Bible. I didn't follow a denominational teaching. I didn't follow a group of theologues, although I have a master's in theology from an institution that gave degrees in theology. I think when I look at the $40,000 I paid for my education, that's not counting the monies that I paid to go to undergraduate school, but I don't see that as a waste because that helped me procure a certain amount of intelligence to advance in a society that accepted you as a member that played the game as you went on and went to school. This subject matter is difficult for me to talk about now, but I have to talk about it. It's just another chapter in my life that has not been thoroughly investigated, spoken about, and given vent to. So please bear with me if I kind of hesitate, because I'm thinking before I'm speaking. Many black people today don't do that. They just have a synaptic input into their brain and they respond to it. I'm trying to be as truthful as I can about all matters. What if I had taken the $40,000 that I paid for my collegiate degrees with, and I still pursued God and followed God, and took all the money that I gave in the religious institution, the church, because we didn't have overseas missions. I think three times I sent about $250 each time to a Nigerian pastor. I forget his name. His name escapes me. But he was an exchange student at Talbot Seminary in La Mirada, California. When I attended, I befriended the Nigerian pastor and sent him money. So I don't want to count that in. But all the monies, the offerings, I didn't believe in tithes. Lucy and I gave more than a tenth. My God, God blessed me tremendously. What if I had kept that money and invested it in Powernomics, as Claude Anderson suggests? I recall when the book first came out, and Claude, of course, went to Crenshaw Christian Center to push the book. This is where the intellectual Christians, the ones with money, attended Fred Price's church, because they were praying for good health, more money, and all of that. But the point of Claude Anderson's book was to bring the tribe together. What if all the Baptists, Episcopalians, Charismatics, Methodists, tongue speakers, non-tongue speakers, Catholics, all the African American church people took all of their offerings that they were giving to the church and put it into a black self bank, a bank, a banking institution. I gave my money to the church freely. I was a pastor in the church. I told the people, if you don't have it to give, don't give. There's enough of us here that has enough to give. What if, listen to me, across this nation, from the time of our emancipation after the Civil War, I'm thinking about the community in Oklahoma. Blacks had businesses, newspapers, cleaners, bakeries, laundromats, everything. We owned it. What if we took all that money that we gave now and hold on to the church? The church building could have been paid for out of another fund out of our pocket. We would call that the building fund for the church. But what if you took all of that money and put it in a black conscious economic state, as Claude Anderson in his book Powernomics really suggest? Where do you think the black community would be today? Do you think that our children would be running up and down the street with 45 automatic weapons, killing their other peers? What if, instead of paying all the money that black people have spent, I'm just thinking out loud, you know, PJ, all the money that we spent on Tupac concert tickets, on Tupac CDs out of the trunk of, I don't know, somebody's car. What if we took that money and we had enough self-love? Oh, God, help me. If we had enough self-love, loving us. I had a pastor call me today. And he was telling, we were speaking about someone, and he says, you know, that person is stupid. And I said, yes, most of them are stupid at that age. Brainless because of the time when I was educated, when I came up, we did not put a premium on ignorance. See, I don't want to say it because it feels like I'm slamming an indictment against my people for no reason. I don't want to include a lot of African American people that I know personally because they've made great accomplishments. They've done things that we can be proud of. But I must say at the same time, there has been great harm done to us. You know, we talk about poverty. Claude Anderson talks a lot about poverty. If you took all the money, man, I haven't read the whole book yet, and I hope that he gets to it. But if someone had said, churches, let's come together to lift our own communities where we live up out of poverty. Well, how do we do that? We put all the money that we collect on Sunday mornings, instead of adding another wing onto the church or giving the pastor a vacation in the Bahamas with his wife for $25,000 a year, are for jetting these preachers all over the country so that they can exchange money, launder money is what they're doing. Instead of us doing that, let's focus upon our community in the name of Jesus. Let us ask the power of the Holy Spirit to give us insight into loving that man that's fallen on crack. Let's open up some rooms in our houses and start taking some of these people that's on crystal meth in, and let's minister to them. Let's minister to these young women and tell these young women that they shouldn't lie down with these guys and let these guys put their seed in them when these guys have no intention on procuring safety and a place to live in peace with them. Let's tell our young men to wait. You say to wait on what, Pastor John? To wait before they start having sex at early ages. Let's take some of that church money and let's invest in sports, athletics. I need some seltzer water here. You see what I mean? You get me? Let's focus that's good. Let's focus upon what we know we can get done. Now, who's going to be in charge of this money? For God's sake, not the preachers. No. Because the church collectively, if you really want to use the exegesis correctly, the called out ones, the ones that are specifically called out by God to fulfill God's purpose. My brother Zarek asked me, he says, when are we going to sit down and do some Zoom meetings? And I told him, not until a solution comes forward. I don't want to do a Zoom meeting and talk about what the problem is. Everybody knows what the problem is. We've lost our place in society as black men in this country. Now, it's very easy for us to blame racism, lack of economic fervency, but we're missing off the main point why the black community is in such terrible shape. We're in the shape we're in today because of what we didn't do yesterday and the day before. We waste our time watching, what can I say it? How can I say it? Watching television, we're more concerned about the millionaires that's been allowed to be millionaires, what they're saying and doing, and these millionaires, these one percenters of black people that most of our people are watching are setting the tone. There was an interesting guy has a YouTube page. And in this YouTube page, he pointed out the rich people that are doing time in prison for murder and mayhem. And the black ones, when he began to mention them, especially the young ones with the scars and tattoos all over their faces and everything, the music has obliterated the young black minds of this country. I said when Tupac first came out, now I think the young man was a poet and didn't know it. He was a prodigy before his time, talented. Just like Tiger Woods is talented, but now Tiger Woods turning SUVs over going around a curve up on the coast. So Tiger's not a role model. He's having problems. What do we do? What would have happened if we had put all of our money together in this church bank? We could have possibly started our own country. I believe we could have bought a state. Am I sounding a lot like Farrakhan? Farrakhan's been trying to tell us for years that the black man would never be accepted as equal to a white man in this society. I have worked with many white men. I didn't want to be equal with them, and I'm damn sure that they didn't want to be equal with me. That wasn't the point of us working together. The point of me working with any person, be he white, brown, green, purple, blue, pink, I'm working with them because we're human beings and we're working towards the objective, working towards a goal. And that goal should be not that the white man would necessarily give me more than I can produce of my own willingness, because I've never asked for that. I have one white friend of mine, Dr. Bob. Most of you, if you know me, you know Bob Klink, dear friend of mine. If it had not been for him, I would not have, I could not have afforded the travels that I took around the country doing conferences. If it not had been for him, the radio ministry that I was involved in would not have functioned practically at all. He gave collectively as one individual more than most of the people in the church gave. I'm just telling you like it is. And so I have many white friends to this day that I love and I will always love and always appreciate the kindness that they've shown towards me. Many a time I've had to explain to some of my white friends, trying to give an explanation for the ill behavior of people that I know. People that can take something out of one hand and knock something out of the next hand with the next breath. An unfortunate situation, but that's the way it is. I don't know, I'm not an economist, but I propose that if we had done what Claude Anderson is suggesting, of what I'm suggesting, He took it to Fred Price's church because that was the biggest church in Los Angeles. I recall when Dr. Anderson was having those meetings at Fred Price's church, and I was thoroughly brainwashed into not listening to anything from anyone that would go to Fred Price's church because of what he preached. He lied. He lied on God. He lied on the Bible. And I'm not trying to throw rocks at his grave, but he's dead, and he died of COVID, and I hear he died miserably, but his faith couldn't stop it. And his entire ministry, the riches that his family has today, was because he contributed to the lying, thieving doctrines of Kenneth Copeland, Kenneth Hagin, Creflo Dollar, and people of that sort, and opened up the doors. As a matter of fact, Fred Price was one of the first pastors that began to ordain females as pastors. And today, most of the churches in the inner cities, many of the churches in the inner cities, I don't know the percentage rate, are run by women. And really, there's no real men there, because if there were, they would know better. Our community is gone. When I speak to other people and they ask me what my opinion is concerning the status of our community, and I tell them what my thoughts are. They don't want to have anything to do with me. And they think that I've, you know, I'm really surprised. The book Urban Apologetics by Eric Mason, I'm reading through it, and in the first section of the book, and I'm reading slowly because I'm reading two books. Now, he is absolutely correct in his analysis of many white churches in America. They are yet using this selective kind of discourse when they speak about God, and it is forever, endlessly pushing people away from the truth that God is the God of all nations. You know, I think that the core idea of Christianity is that if you don't join us, then you're all going to hell. We're the only ones with the truth. Stop it. Stop it. There is a God before America stole it from the Indians. There is a God before most of the European people crawled out of their caves. There is a God. Many people do not want to accept the reality of the fact that God had a divine purpose for all of his creation. Man, you know, when I think of the Mars project, Tesla going to Mars, right? When I think about all of that, man, in my lifetime, to think that they've landed a rover or something on Mars and sending back pictures in my lifetime. There is God. That same planet was there in the 1900s, in the 1800s, 17, let's keep going back, 1600s, 1500s, 14, 13, 1200s, 1100s, 900s. Let's go all the way back to 10,000 years. Mars was there. A million years. Mars was there. The earth was here. Going through evolutionary changes, it took time. As a matter of fact, if you have Amazon Prime, you should go to their movies. They have a movie called Time. I watched it today. It's a story of a black couple, really a black woman, marvelous black woman, who raised her children, her sons, alone because her man, she and her man attempted to rob a bank. And of course, she spent a few years in jail, and he spent about 20 in jail. And it's a story about her holding her son's life together until daddy came home, and she worked endlessly to have him freed. And the best scene in the movie was when he's out of prison, a free man, hugging his sons. I immediately I'm starting to cry again, starting to weep because a boy needs his daddy. He needs his papa. And our boys are now killing other boys. It's like something to me out of a horror movie. Now, what if we had taken all this money in all these churches, every time you took up an offering and all this stuff? We would have had institutions in practically every major state where there are major cities, where you have men thinking the way that I'm thinking, distributing these funds, these monies, because if it was put in the black church bank, the real one, not the pastor's bank account, not the first lady's bank account, whoever she may be, what amazes me is why black Protestant preachers are so against our African brothers who do not necessarily believe on the level that we believe. They are a part of our tribe. They speak our language. They know our culture through and through. But here again, black people appear to be the only people, well, as far as I can see, maybe I haven't looked far enough, but we are a people, excuse me, I have to belch, I'm drinking this bubbly water. We are a people that don't love our own kind. And I believe that that was taught to us by our slave owners. Because no one in his right mind would not love his own kind of people. It just doesn't make any sense. You know, if I sat down with someone, somebody just invited me to join a Zoom meeting, and what they're talking about is activism to become an actor and get in the movies. No, because the first thing that they ask you to do there here in Hollywood is take off your clothes. Let me see how bodacious you can get. How far will you go? Come on, the industry is polluted with stuff like that. So I'm not going to get on a Zoom meeting to look at people that would tell me that they would marginalize themselves to make money. Talking about the movies, Tyler Perry, with his great speech about loving, right? Yeah, okay. And Tyler Perry would give a lot of his fortune for that. Just think about it. If every well-to-do rich, I mean like Bill Cosby when he was rich making all that money, okay? Motown making all that money. People that made money. I'm not talking about the entertainers that had to struggle to live, that had to sleep in the bus or the car or wasn't allowed in a hotel. They scraped a little money. I'm talking about the ones that got millions that turned into possibly billions of dollars. That's what I'm talking about. Oh, wait a minute. Now, this is a privilege. A preacher just said, do you still have your robe? Or did you give that to Sean? I want to preach in it on Sunday. Okay, Pops? Well, I'm going to tell him, okay. See, there are some preachers that still respect me, and they want to preach in my robe. And knowing this preacher, he'd probably want to retain the robe. Because John Coleman is a real preacher. See, I'm not sitting here in the Lucy Coleman studio bemoaning the fact that I don't preach anymore. I'm preaching right now. But I don't think too many people are going to hear it because it's too late for our community. Well, I'll let the young man come over and get my robe. I wonder which one does he want. As a matter of fact, I'm going to watch him preach in my robe live while he preaches. That's what I'm going to do. Yeah. Talking about a preacher, here's a shout out for Elvin Eddington Jr. I've been watching him. He is with Haygood, I think his pastor's name is Haygood. And Haygood lets Elvin preach, and Elvin so reminds me of me. Well, what else could he do? He came up under me. It's good to know that I'm kind of like a pastor emeritus. I have these young men that still have the fire of God in their hearts, not afraid to display it and to show it. Every Sunday morning, I watch me preach. I have a few hundred DVDs of my preaching. And of course, I just dig in the stack and pull out a DVD. I don't know what day it is, what I'm talking about. I put it on my big screen. While I sit down and have my coffee Sunday morning, I'm listening to me preach. I don't go to church. I don't listen to anybody else. You know why? I don't trust anybody. I trust me. Sometimes when I'm preaching, I found that I've said some things that I've changed my mind about that. And I say to myself, okay, I've changed about that. Because the older you get, the wiser you become. You become more intellectual and intelligent in your discernment instead of just believing something shallowly. If you want to believe in God, you want to go deep. And one of my admonitions to everyone is to go into the red letters where Jesus is speaking. Preach that. Man, when you see what Jesus had to say about a lot of things. Hey, can I do some of that right now for you? I think I want to do some of that right now. I'm just going to do it just to see what happens. To prove my point here. I don't have anything else to do tonight. And I'm not going to go and waste my time. I'm going to go to the book of Mark. And I'm just turning to something. I want to see a bunch. Okay, here we go. Mark chapter 4. Okay? Mark chapter 4. and he began to teach again by the sea. And such a very great multitude gathered to him that he got into the boat in the sea and sat down, for the whole multitude was by the sea on the land. So you have to see Jesus kind of like in this boat, and he had to move back off from the shore because the people were crowding around him and pulling on him. He was very popular amongst the people. Verse 2 says, and he was teaching them many things in parables and was saying to them in his teaching, listen to this. Now, see, when he says listen to this, he's beginning to give them a principle. He says, the sower went out to sow. Now, they knew about that because it was an agricultural environment that he was in. These weren't city people. These people planted the seed and waited for the food to come up, took animals and cut the fur off of them to keep warm. This was before modern technology. And behold, the sower went out to sow. And it came about that while he was sowing, some seed fell beside the road, and the birds came and ate it up. Now, he's talking to them in parables, and I understand it very well, because when he talks about the seed is the word of God, the truths that he was speaking. And I recall this parable, my whole life has been in this book. He was talking about the different types of hearts that would hear about him and what he had to say and how these different types of individuals would correspondingly respond to what he was saying. And the whole intention of this, especially when people came to church, was to figure out which one of the persons you were. That's what made the teachings of Jesus extraordinary. All right. Some fell beside the road, and the birds came and ate it up. And others fell on the rocky ground, where they did not have much soil, and immediately it sprang up, because it had no depth in the soil. And after the sun had risen, it was scorched, and because it had no root, it withered away. Now, I know what that's about. That's simple. Some people like to hear good preach. Ooh, John, you sure can preach. They hear that preaching, and the next thing you know, they're out there doing the same thing that you warned them against doing. That's what Jesus was saying. And Jesus goes on in verse 7 and says, and other seed fell amongst the thorns, and the thorns came up and choked it, and it yielded no crop. In other words, when you hear the word of God, but then you thinking about you got to make that money, you got to cheat in order to make your life go, that these wicked things just came and just choked out what the word was trying to put in you. And, well, you know the rest of that. And then in verse 8 he said, and other seed fell on good soil, and they grew up and increased and yielded a crop and produced 30, 60, and 100-fold. He said, some people take this and their lives are enriched with it. That's why I was telling people when Fred Price was telling all them lies and everything, I told people, you are not God's favorite because you got a lot of money? No. Jesus was saying, when you take God and the principles of God and apply it to yourself, your life will become multiplied with favor. I understood the parables. I loved preaching from it and explaining it. As a matter of fact, I asked, all these ladies are dead now because they were my senior citizens in the church. I asked the ladies why they wanted me to bring them a Wednesday noon Bible study of the church. These women would have somebody bring them to the church, and I'd meet with only five or six of them, and they'd bring me lunch. They'd make food for me, and so I spend time with them. And I was curious, and I asked them, why do you come to hear me preach? Why? And it was Hazel moaning. She told me, you open the Bible up to us, John. You're the first pastor here at this church that ever opened it up. I said, what do you mean? She said, when you preached, it became you. We saw it in you, and we marveled. Now, of course, I didn't know what she was talking about. But the fact is now, since I'm retired, I know because I do it with young men all the time. I am a hardcore old guy. I don't believe in, you know, a lot of people think that the young men that come my way, beat me over the head and try to make me do, they can't try to make me do a damn thing. I'm just keeping it plain. I haven't given in to the whims of a young man. I just love being around them. A lot of them are stupid as all get out. But they need to be trained, just like Jesus knew that the people that was around him. Remember that part in the Bible where Jesus said, O ye of little faith. It's when Martha and Mary, he told his disciples, we're going to have to go on down to Bethany. And they said, why? Well, Lazarus is asleep. And they said, well, if he's asleep, he'll be all right. Why are we going down there? Because he's asleep. And then Jesus stopped and looked at him and said, Lazarus is dead. Now, why did he use the term asleep? Because Jesus knew that death to him is nothing but you sleeping. And he knew that he had to go wake him up. Beautiful. And when I preached that, when Jesus got to Lazarus's tomb, you guys know the story. And Jesus said, remove the stone. And they said, oh no, he stinketh by now, meaning that the maggots is eating up his body. And they knew what a dead body smelt like. But nevertheless, at his word, they moved the stone. And he just said, Lazarus, come forth. And I recall when I researched this, when I preached it, the reason that he called Lazarus by name, because that wasn't a rich man's tomb. Here recently in Egypt, they found a rich medical physician's tomb. He was mummified, and all of his worldly goods was down there. That rich man had a bunch of stuff, and the Egyptian museums, oh my goodness. They built a whole new thing to put all this stuff in. It's a beautiful thing. One of these days, I'd love to go see that. I would. I love ancient things. To look at a coffin, oh my God, the paintings and everything. But Jesus says, Lazarus, come forth. The reason that he said that, because if he had said, come forth, without calling Lazarus by name, every dead body in the tomb area would have come forward. That proves that Jesus is God. This book was not written on a whim. If you study it and say, well, why didn't he just say, come forth, because everybody in there would have. He had to call Lazarus by name. And this is why the true Christian believes that even though we die, we are going to die, that there is a day when every soul will have to give a reckoning. Oh yeah, brother, don't get me to preach it. There's a day that each of us are going to have to give a reckoning before God. We're going to have to answer for what we did. That man, they caught him, tattoos all on his face. That man that killed that poor 7-year-old girl that was in a car with her family trying to get a Happy Meal in McDonald's. They caught that fool. And the fool pulled a gun on another family in their car on the highway and tried to hijack them. What did he say? He was 18 years old. These youngsters are out of their mind. They should have shot him down. Should have given him judgment. I can't think of the scripture right now, but it's in the Old Testament. And it says, because judgment is delayed, God's judgment is going to come down hard on us. And for those of you that continuously try to make George Floyd your hero, he was a thug and a criminal, a hooligan, a dope user, and a thief and a liar. And now you're making him a hero. What has happened to the African-American mind? Oh, my God. The hero is my African-American mailman who every day goes to that building and sorts that mail and walks this beat and puts mail in the citizen's box, has a smile on his face, making a living for his family. What was George Floyd's job? What was he doing? Don't make him my hero. Y'all got it twisted. You got this mess turned upside down. All these people shooting at the police and running, where did they live? Who are the people sleeping in the house with them? I don't know about this latest man. 3 bullets in the arm and 1 in the back of his neck that killed him from the Carolinas with 10 children. God help him. I hope the brother was working to take care of his 10 children. But my question is, why did they show up there? Another warrant. They were just fulfilling taking care of the law. Why didn't he turn himself in? I'm just saying, we're making the wrong people our heroes. And just because a person's skin color is black, do you remember Idi Amin? He was black. Do you remember the Boko Haram? They're black. Huh? What? Man, you got a few young crusaders out there telling the truth about this stuff. Just a few of them, thank God, they are still telling the truth. But I think that what we must do is we must concentrate on listening to wisdom in our community and rejecting that is not copacetic. Oh, this old man is getting older. And when I get excited, and you know what? I one of these days, I'm going to, I just may do it tomorrow. This webcast will be over in about 6 minutes. But I think tomorrow, I just may open up the Bible and just start preaching. You know, just, I'm an independent thinker with very good reasons. Because, you know, people don't come by and visit me. I used to have a young man, he came by at least 2 or 3 times a week. He don't come by at all no more. When I told him to get his head right about the popo, about the police. I said, because, fool, you'll get me shot. You can't be around me not trusting policemen. When I see a policeman walk up to me, my heart does not start racing. If your heart starts racing, what's your problem? What are you hiding? Wait a minute. Wait a minute. My good friend Seiko Woods already took you to it. I'm going to take you to it because I think I need to take you to it because most of you need to hear it from somebody older than Seiko. See, Seiko's a young, he's a young man. But Seiko has experienced some stuff in his young life from the church. I hope he understands where I'm coming from now. But Seiko often speaks from Romans 13, where it says, let every person be in subjection to the governing authorities. That every person means you, my friend. For there is no authority except from God. What Paul meant by that, whatever country you in, whatever government you under, whatever place you live, somebody's going to be in charge of your ass, and you need to get it in gear. And then it says, and those which exist are established by God. Do you know what this Holy Writ is saying? There is no government that is allowed to be there unless God Almighty in heaven knows it. Whether Black Lives Matter or Pink Lives don't, it don't matter. Therefore, verse 2, he who resists the authority has opposed the ordinance of God. Paul is saying if the government is in charge and gives you an order to do something and you oppose, you're resisting God. And then it says, and they who have opposed will receive condemnation upon themselves. Here's the Bible giving acquiescence to a bullet in that girl's neck or head while she was trying to knife those other people. Then it says in verse 3, for rulers are not a cause of fear for the good behavior, but for the evil. In other words, if you do good, what you scared of the cops for? That's what I was trying to tell this young man that was in my house. And then Paul says, do you want to have no fear of authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise of the same. For it, meaning that government, that person with the authority that's in charge, is the minister of God to you for good. But if you do what is evil, you know you got that warrant, running, shooting at the police, shooting people, killing them, stabbing. It says, for it, meaning the government, the power and the authority, does not bear the sword for nothing. For it, that government, that cop, that police, that sheriff is the minister of God. God is using them with the shiny badge and the stick and the gun and the taser, an avenger who brings wrath upon the one who practices evil. I rest my case. Don't come to me telling me that you want to live in a world void of policemen. You need to get the hell out of my face, real quick, real quick. I don't care if you my mama. I tell my mama that. How in the world are we going to live in a society and exist if we do not have people that have obligated themselves to make sure that the population, when I go to bed at night, I don't hear no screaming and riotous behavior around here because of all these divisions of the police and the sheriffs and the marshals and the SWAT and everything else. There are people up, going up and down the street taking care of me while I sleep. So don't come to me telling me you don't believe in the police. I can't have nothing to do with you. You're a dangerous fella. You're a dangerous woman, and you out there screaming and marching, talking about Black Lives Matter. Keep your ass at home and keep your damn mouth shut, and you may live to see the next day. you ignoramuses. This is Pastor John in the Lucy Coleman studio saying thank you for coming by my site.